So I'll explain the form again, just so that you remember. The invitation is for one of you to occupy this cushion here and to come with an inquiry question. A question that's perhaps arisen from your practice over the day or over the days or time here. Or it may be a question that's much more general about your life. But please don't come with a theoretical or speculative question. Or a question about your friend down the road who had a problem, when I know it's really you. So, at any time, of course, as I said last night, the inquiry can come to an end. You can say thank you and leave, and I can say thank you and you leave. Sometimes with inquiry, there's more questions raised than actually answered. But that's actually part of keeping the inquiry alive and keeping that curiosity of mind to inquire into the nature of this reality, to keep that alive. And so sometimes over the days you might find yourself reflecting on something that was said here. Or if you were the person who came to inquire, it may be the beginning of a process that goes on for weeks, months, and perhaps even years. So sometimes the inquiry process may seem puzzling to those who listen. It is as it is, right here. And sometimes it's a curious thing, because we tend to evaluate and say, oh, that was a fabulous inquiry, and that was, okay. Oh, that one I wasn't interested in. We look at it like that. Yet, I've learned from doing this for some time that you can't actually make those evaluations with any kind of accuracy. That sometimes an inquiry that I thought didn't actually go anywhere much has, for the person who inquired, been deeply valuable. And it's only over the days and weeks that follow that that's become clear. So the form itself is rather precious. It's about inquiring and seeing into the nature of reality and loosening up the stuck places of the heart and mind. So trying or endeavouring to see in a way that steps through the mind of habit. This is the purpose of the inquiry. And just to remind you, those listening are very much part of it. You're asked to listen with the utmost respect, being very quiet and still, and listening also to your own responses as the inquiry progresses. And also maintaining a good level of attention and awareness. That's always really helpful. I know it's quite late at night, but, early for some people, but some of you may be feeling a little tired, but if you can, please just focus. So as with last night, we'll just have 30 seconds or so of silence, an inquiry, then a couple of minutes in between, and then another. Listening with presence. Yes, anybody? It's open to those people who did not inquire last night. If you could say your name, please.
My name is Lubna.
Welcome.
Ashi.
try again to see if
it's okay now. I want to tell something that happened with me.
Yes, please.
When I came here, I came last minute to the retreat, and I didn't follow all the forms and the internet. So when I came here, I met Asaf, and he said there's a form I have to write my details. The second day I take the form, my name, emergency number, all of this. And then there were two questions about do you have health problems?
Do you have what?
If you had a health problem.
Health problem, yes.
Of course, I said no. And the second question was, do you have or did you had any mental problems such like depression, anxiety, panic attacks? And somehow, the word anxiety trapped me. And I started to think, do I have an anxiety? Did I have an anxiety? No, it's fear, it's not an anxiety. And then I said, so should I say no? But I did feel an anxiety a few years ago. But then what if I feel an anxiety? Oh, I feel something. it's not okay. Well, if I feel so much anxiety, then they have to call the emergency number, which is my sister.
Okay.
Then I don't want my sister to know that I have an anxiety. Then I maybe will put another number of a friend. But Michal doesn't know that I'm in the retreat. Should I call Michal? And I had this an hour of investigation and my heart beats, and then there's a voice come and said, hey, Lubna, it's a thought. It's just a thought, it's not real. Oh, phew. And then everything just go away. For the first time I saw a staff, I said, take it.
Oh,
take
fantastic. The form. That is a wonderful description of how thought forms the anxiety.
Completely.
Anxiety is constructed with our thoughts. There's a feeling tone in the body. You said you felt something.
Yes.
And then on top of that are all the thoughts that you so wonderfully described.
I almost, you know, went to hospital in
yes.
my mind with the thoughts.
Yeah, there was a total catastrophe.
Which it can be very real. It could happen in reality,
yes.
right?
That you'd be taken to hospital? I don't
no,
think so.
No, I think if I don't know, if I didn't tell myself, if I didn't trust myself enough that it's a thought, it
well,
can turn to something else.
You wouldn't be taken to hospital. You would have been told to come and see me because I happen to be a psychologist trained in the treatment of anxiety disorders. It's actually my speciality. So you would not have ended up in hospital, even if you'd been having massive panic attacks. You would have ended up on my doorstep. So, having seen that, since that time, have there been any other anxious experiences or thoughts?
Yeah, but without feeling.
Uh-huh. Say a little more if you could.
I think about anxiety.
Ah, so what you're saying is the thought arises, but because you can see thought as thought, and you have the awareness, this is just a thought.
Completely.
There's not the overwhelming feeling of anxiety that comes with it.
Yes.
You're a star. Absolutely brilliant. That's fantastic.
But the question that I
yes.
wanted to ask, which really in my mind.
Yes.
When we meditate, I have so many things that I want to practice. Compassion.
Yes.
Kindness.
Yes.
Compassion to myself, to the enemies, to those who I like, who I don't like. Yeah?
Yes.
Breathing, short, long. Right? How you organize all of this? what's come first? I mean, I see a long way, right?
It's enough to get anxious about,
isn't it? To practice like 20 minutes a day, then this is fantastic. But with what I start that, it doesn't become a salad in my mind.
Okay. So, how did you know that the thought was just a thought?
I isolated from my feeling.
Ah, you separated the thought from the feeling, but how did you do that? How did you know that? Yes, you do. We'll try again. Here you are. You have a feeling in your chest. You have a thought that arises in the mind. You reported a great story of thoughts, one thought that led to another thought about the thought, and another thought about that thought, and so on. How could you tell me about that? What is it within you that allowed you to see that process?
I don't know, it's just a thought, you know.
Sorry?
It's a feeling that it's just a thought.
Yeah. And it's revealed how?
It's there.
Yes?
It's not.
It's there?
Yeah. It's somewhere else.
And how do you know it's there?
Because it's in my mind. It's just in my analysis of things.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that reveals your mind?
Sometimes I don't just... Sometimes... Everything is almost a thought, you know.
Sorry?
It's all thoughts.
Yes. So, upstairs here, in the mind, there's thought after thought after thought. And we know that because not only can we think, but the mind has this wonderful capacity to be self-reflective, doesn't it? We can be aware of our thoughts. We can be aware of our feelings.
Yes.
So, in order to know that your anxiety was constructed with thought, you were aware.
Completely.
Ah, this is meditation. This is meditation. So please don't worry about the fruit salad of instructions. Just simply be aware of all that occurs in the heart and mind, and then the insights will start to emerge. Just as you've already had this insight about your anxiety, or tendency towards anxiety, and that's it. So, you mentioned fear as well as anxiety. Fear and anxiety tend to go together. Is fear an issue for you as well?
No.
Okay. So you are the fearless one, I've heard. Yes?
What's your question?
Are you fearless? Fearless. Are you without fear?
At the moment?
Yes.
Yes, I'm without fear.
Okay. Does fear arise often for you?
I would say yeah. I mean, fear is not an anxiety. If you ask me about an anxiety, it's something else. But fear is in my life. You know, we fear all the time. Security, life,
yes.
Work, family. It's something is part of reality. You know, I live with it. It's I just, you know. It doesn't stop me from functioning in my life.
Exactly. So there are plenty of things to be fearful about. And yet you've found a way of being with life in the face of what is ordinarily a very fearful situation in this whole region.
Yeah.
You've found a way of being with it without being overwhelmed by it.
Completely.
And it doesn't stop you from functioning.
Completely.
Could you tell us how you do that?
I learn to do that.
Yes.
I'm learning, it's not learned.
Yes.
Yeah? I just don't panic by the fear. I always say to myself, it's a human feeling.
Yes.
You know? It's like the monster, you know, you just let it be. It's normal. It's make me feel exist sometimes, alive.
Yes.
So it's there and it's okay. What's not okay is to feel in anxiety and not to function.
Yes.
In your life, but fear is like sadness, like, you know, other things.
Beautiful. Well seen. Because then you can live with a freedom, unburdened from the anxiety. Anxiety paralyzes us. Anxiety prevents us from functioning. Fear will arise and subside.
Completely. I have many moments of fear when I'm here, and I have many moments of happiness.
Yes.
Many moments of sadness and of anger, of everything. But I'm here and I'm, you know, I'm here.
I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I have another question for you. Today we had instructions on joy. And you spoke a little bit about joy. Since that time, have you had any more reflections on it? You spoke about a joy that just came upon you.
Yeah, I thought about it also, not only feel it, and I would love to share it with the group.
Please.
I think it would be useful. I said this morning that there's a feeling of joy or happiness that come from nowhere. Usually we think and then we are happy or miserable. But sometimes you are happy and then you think where this happiness came from. And it's there, which it's not conditional to any situation or to anything around. And what I found in the last few months, a lot by the help of Leila, is to recognize that we have hundreds of moments of joy in our life, in the day, even into the sadness and into the miserable times, cracks of happiness, of joy. And I was thinking today, why we don't see this?
This
That's
is
what I was thinking.
Yes.
I don't have answer, but this is...
And this is exactly what we three teachers are teaching. We are trying to impart our enthusiasm for training the mind to see the moments of freedom. Today, every single person in this room has experienced numerous moments of unproblematic freedom. It has not been a continuous miserable day of trying to meditate. It might have felt like that to some, or a day where we are continuously tired, or continuously depressed, or continuously anxious. When we start to look, when we really look, there's just lots of moments where there just is not a problem. There's freedom of the heart and mind, yet the sense of self habitually lands and clings to the one problem and doesn't see the 99 other moments of freedom. It is a habit of mind to negativity, and negativity is fueled by unfulfilled desire. So whenever we have a desire that is not met, and our desires rise and rise and rise, we've just fulfill one desire and another one pops up. So whenever we have a desire that's unfulfilled, the movement of mind is towards negativity. There's something wrong with the place, something wrong with being here. The food might have been delicious, but there might have been one thing we didn't like. Or someone might have walked out the door too slowly and we had to wait, and we didn't like that. But, or just all kinds of things. So we have to train the heart and mind to the freedom, which is just what you are saying, isn't it?
Yes.
So thank you for sharing your experiences, both around the anxiety, your insights into fear, and just letting fear come and go, come and go. When the Buddha was asked how he dealt with fear when he walked in the forest, he said that he kept walking until all his fear subsided. When he was asked if fear comes while he's sitting, what did he do? He said he kept sitting until all his fear subsided. So we need to see the cessation, the ending of things. Which brings me to another practice we'll come to in a few days, which is focusing on the endings. Because once we start to see the ending of fear, the ending of fear reveals what?
Happiness.
Yes. What else?
Love.
Yes. When fear ends, it reveals happiness. It reveals love. It reveals our freedom. And has anyone in the room been afraid today? Did anyone have even one thought of fear? Yes. Did the thought end? Did the fear end?
No.
Yes?
No.
It didn't. One person with fear. Come and see me tomorrow. Okay. So we need to begin to see the ending of our fear. And when we see the ending of our fear, we see also the ending of our suffering. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Let's just sit quietly. Yes, anybody? Ah, yes, come. We'll do it now. So, what's your name?
Ruth. I have two questions, but I don't think we'll get to the second question, so... Is it on? Oh, okay. So my name is Ruth. I like it less now because there's an echo. But anyway. So I said I have two questions, but quite broad and
So let's begin with
the first question. Western philosophy, Western thought, was always very, since the 17th century, starting with Descartes, was very, very involved with the self. Individualism, starting with Descartes, with the cogito, okay, I think therefore I am, and ending, I think, with existentialism, the fulfillment of the self. And then about over a year ago, I came to Tovana, and then I started to hear that we abolish the self. We don't concentrate on the self, because the self has no meaning. I have no meaning. And so when I, if I meditate, if I have to, like, thoughts come, and they have to be treated like colored balloons that come and pass, that just go. And you have to get rid of this thought. If you get a thought in your mind, you shouldn't start thinking about it, but you should, you know, let it go, because if not, you lose concentration. So so this meditation becomes very, very boring, because the moment that I start thinking about something, I have to let go of it, because if not, the self gets involved.
Okay, so
Where's reality in all this? I mean, I'm being told that in order to be in reality, you can't involve the self.
Okay, so let's begin to explore. First of all, the notion that we're trying to get rid of the self is a misunderstanding. We're not trying to get rid of the self. In fact, when the Buddha was asked, is there a self or not, he didn't answer.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't answer for a very good reason. Can you guess what the reason is? Why would the Buddha not answer that question? Is there a self or not?
Because he is the one who's talking. I mean, he is the self.
Okay.
He is the very self. And this is what my problem is with not thinking about the self, when everything that we're doing revolves around us, but around the self.
Okay. Let's try another way. Tell me what happens exactly when you're sitting in meditation and you're aware of a thought. Where is the self?
In the thought.
Okay. So, the thought is there. And in our conventional way of seeing, we'd say, that's my thought.
Yes.
Okay. All right. You're aware of the thought.
So I'm aware of the self.
Yes.
Because the self is in the thought.
Okay. Now, Have you ever had an experience in life where your sense of self or sense of who you are has faded into the background?
If I've had a thought that we're...
An experience.
Oh.
Have you ever had an experience where, for example, you've been lying on the grass looking at the stars, or you've been looking out over the ocean, and your sense of self, the I, the me, has been rather faint, yes, okay, all right, tell me an experience.
If you relate to the other, to another person.
Yes.
So you're thinking about the other person, not about yourself.
Okay. So when you have a selfless thought about another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible to have a selfless thought.
Yeah.
Ah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Yes. It's possible to have a selfless thought. A thought about another which is not from or bound up with our own ego.
But it ends up, yes, being, because I'm the subject, who the other is the object,
yes.
And I, the thinker, mm-hmm. is the subject, is me, is, mm-hmm. it's my thought.
Yes, and we habitually divide reality. Have you ever looked at a flower and just for that instant seen the beauty?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. In that instant, where was the you, the self?
In the wanting to see the beauty.
Ah, that comes later. In the instant of just seeing.
In the awareness.
Yes, it's just there. You just see the flower.
Yeah. So I'm aware.
Yes. Beautiful. It's just the seeing of the flower.
Mm-hmm.
And then the eye comes in and says, oh, that's beautiful. I want to see 2, 3, 4, a whole bunch of flowers. Doesn't it? Desire arises then.
Could? Yeah.
Okay. Let's take another example. Give me another example of where the self is quite, what shall I say, almost transparent, not strong.
It's a very difficult one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Death.
Yes. Say
because,
more.
And that's coming to the second question. I knew that the two were related somehow, but I can't bring myself to see myself dead because I'm so fearful of death.
Okay.
But
so
on the other hand,
mm-hmm.
In order to live fully, in order to embrace life, you also have to somehow accept you have to be aware of death without fear, because death is part of life. It's the end of life.
Yes. Death is not only the end of life, but life and death go together, don't they?
Yes.
Right now there's the death of each moment, the death of each breath.
Yes.
We cannot know our own death, our own literal death, can we?
No.
Okay. So for you there's some fear of the self dying.
Yes.
And this is at the core of your whole question, isn't it?
I have think that that's, yes.
So it's the fear of annihilation.
Oh.
the fear of annihilation, the ending of the self.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the reason the Buddha didn't answer the question, is there a self or not, was because if he said, no, there wasn't a self, and the teaching is not one of no self. That's an error of understanding. The teaching is that form is not self, feelings are not self, and so on. Consciousness is not self. Not that there is no self, because that would be nihilistic, wouldn't it? That's what you have the fear of. And if he said, yes, there was a self, he would be contributing to eternalism.
If he said that there is a self,
yes,
then why so right now there's a self, but in I don't know, in 100 years there won't be a self.
Okay.
Not in my case.
Okay.
But in some cases. I mean,
okay, let's come back to this question. And this is quite difficult, but the whole concept of not self is one of the most difficult things to understand in the Buddha Dharma. Yet once you understand it from your meditation experience or from an inquiry like this, it becomes crystal clear. Yet it's a difficult thing. We're not trying to delete the self. So what if we say, take another experience. When is the self really strong? An experience from your life.
I think precisely in meditation, when I don't know, for some reason, I don't know why, I just feel good. It's just what I think you
Lubna was saying?
That there are, during meditation sometimes, there are moments where I just feel good, very good.
Okay, let's take that. So you feel very good.
Yeah.
At that moment, where's the self?
In the center. It's me who's feeling so good.
It's you who's feeling so good. Okay. Okay. The self, as it's used in the Buddha Dharma, is different from the way that self is used in other spiritual traditions. The self refers to the problematic ego. So in your experience of meditation, where there's joy, where there's an ease, is there any problem?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay.
It's good.
Yes. So right there, is self problematic or not?
No, it's not a problem. No, the self is not a problem there.
Okay.
No.
All right. The Buddha Dharma is only concerned with the end of suffering. The teachings are concerned with suffering and its end. When there's no suffering, never mind how you describe it, whether you describe it as the self being in the center, it doesn't matter. It's the absence of the suffering that counts.
At that given moment, but but this how did he relate then to death? This fear of death.
Okay, so tell me about your fear of death.
The fear of the unknown.
Okay. Say a little more. You fear that which you don't know.
Yes, it's, I think, one of the only things that we don't know. I think it's the only thing that we cannot know. And that will for sure happen.
Okay. It's true. Can we know death while living?
No.
We can't know actually our own literal death. But is there any other way that we can know death while living?
Yes.
How?
With the other.
Yes.
Through the other, through another person.
Yes.
That's as close as we can get.
And so, have you been with someone who's died?
Yes. Yes. And, And actually, in my meditation, not lately, maybe a month ago or so, I pictured this dead person.
Yes.
And it wasn't fearful, and it wasn't sad, and that's how it is.
Okay. So when we see a body, a dead person, it's clear to us, isn't it, that we're not the body?
Yes.
Because the person we knew isn't there in the body.
I didn't understand. I know that it's not me there.
No, I wasn't saying that.
Okay.
No. I wasn't saying that. When we see a corpse, a dead person, a friend who's died, a mother, our father, a child, it's very clear that we are not the body.
Yes, sure.
Because I'm not saying we are not that body over there. I'm saying we, the self, the me, is not the body.
Yeah, right.
Otherwise, we'd be a whole bunch of corpses in the room.
Sure.
So we are not the body. Okay, we're getting somewhere here. Okay, hang in. We are not the body. Okay?
Okay.
Got that?
Okay.
What then? What's your response? Body is not self. We've established that much. What about feelings? A feeling self?
The subject is me who is thinking of the object that is the corpse.
Can subject and object be one when we're thinking about our feeling world? Can subject and object come together?
It could, yes, it could. Because I know that I am not that body, but I know that one day I will resemble that body
yes.
when I die.
Okay.
That's my fear.
So the fear is one of annihilation. So you see that somebody else dies and there's a body there and your fear is that will happen to you. It will.
Yes.
All that we have known as self will cease. So right now, while living, if we look and say, the body is not me, the feeling world is not mine, not me, not mine, the thoughts are not me, not mine, consciousness is not me, not mine, what does that reveal to us?
That all we can perceive or that we can apprehend is phenomena. Again, back to the balloons, the balloons that are passing.
Mm-hmm. So we perceive phenomena.
Yeah.
I think we're stuck here.
We are.
Let's come back to the selfless thought. Reflect on any experience you've ever had that's been selfless.
Talking to someone about him. Again, I said that before. Talking to the other about, or the other talking to me about a story that happened to him. So, then.
Okay, so a selfless experience can occur when you're speaking or listening.
When you're busy with other people.
When the focus is not on you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. When you actually loosen up and let go of I, me and my, where you are no longer speaking from that particular standpoint of self.
Yeah.
And the Buddha teaches that we don't take a standpoint. We see the truth of things when we don't cling to a particular standpoint.
Yeah.
And the standpoint we usually see through is I, me, and my. There is nothing in this world that is a self or belongs to a self. And that's for you to reflect on more and more and more and more. And I suggest you do it, not by talking about it, because it goes rather in circles, but just through the practice, to see that the aggregates are not self. Form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness are not self. It's a technique, it's a strategy. And the Buddha says, abandon what is not self and you'll be happy for a very long time.
It's a technique.
It's a technique. It's a technique. If you look at it like a technique.
So to experience life as phenomena, as events that are occurring, that are happening,
yes,
that are occurring.
They're unfolding freely when we don't get in the way.
Okay.
Almost there.
Okay.
Yeah, almost there.
And so then accordingly you won't think about death, because that's not one of the phenomena.
Or you'll see death in every moment.
Okay.
When we face life, we face death. The two are inseparable. The idea that we're going to die 10 years down the track is an idea. The death of every moment. The death of the self right now, the death of any concept that I hold about anything, reveals our freedom. And life unfolds extraordinarily freely when we don't put the self standpoint in the middle of everything. That's the very cause of our suffering.
So in meditation, I just think about I have to totally not think about me who's experiencing whatever, and just if I'm hungry, then I should say to myself, hunger, and not I am hungry, but hunger. I acknowledge hunger.
Yes, and so I go get something to eat. No problem. Okay.
Okay.
You're overthinking it.
I know. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I have to thank you.
About it.
Thanks. No, no, no. Please don't think about it.
No, I won't.
Just be with life, which unfolds extraordinarily freely.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. So just sitting for a few moments to end. So just reflecting on the first inquiry, our fear is constructed with thought. We can be aware of that. When joy comes sometimes in our sitting, it's an extraordinary joy. It's a joy that's not dependent upon conditions. It's a joy that really shows us the extraordinary freedom of life. And in that there's beauty. When fear ends, there's love. And that's a precious and priceless insight and understanding. On the whole theme of self and not self, we can get ourselves into quite a tangle when we try to think about it. When the self is quite transparent, soft, barely there, as when we look out at the ocean and get a sense of the vastness, self is in the background, and in that experience we can get a sense of that which is limitless. And that limitless nature includes everything. It includes our ego that pops up. It includes the eye that sees the bowl. So the sense of self is impermanent too. It arises and ceases, arises and ceases, arises and ceases. It's only problematic when we cling to something and hold on to something. That's the cause of the suffering. And if we can just soften our view of self enough to see, we see that life unfolds incredibly freely of its own accord. Thank you for listening. And thank you very much to the two who inquired on these very profound and deep Dharma themes. And thank you for your sustained attention for the last hour. Take care, enjoy this walking meditation now, followed by some metta to end the day.